Welcome back to the High Functioning Disaster, the show where we stop pretending life is neat and talk honestly about the chaos we're all navigating. Today, in part two of my conversation of Zulma Williams, the swearing therapist, she gets practical. We break down what anxiety and depression really look like in daily life, why stress is often code for something deeper, and how to interrupt the spiral with grounding, a deep breath, naming what you see, or touching something and describing it to your brain. We talk therapy stigma, especially for men and first responders, why asking for help is actually strength, and why Zulma's job isn't to do it for you, but to hand you the hammer and show you how to hang the picture yourself. We dig into accountability, being the CEO of your own life, the difference between managing emotions and healing them, and why discipline and determination will outlast motivation every single time. Let's get into it. When someone is in one of those spirals of anxiety or depression, are anxious or depressive thinking, what is the smallest step they can take to interrupt it? And then also, why do we often stop at just naming stress and anxiety or depression and not really going deeper and asking what's underneath it?
So one quick step is to take a deep breath. That brings oxygen to your entire system. And then immediately after, when you exhale, you either describe something visually or you touch something and describe what you are touching, or you, these are called grounding techniques, because your brain, okay, so you take a deep breath. So it interrupts the brain going down the spiral, number one. But then immediately after, you're like, oh, there is a sign and it has letters and it has a lot of colors. But like, if you describe the sign behind me in great detail, you cannot be freaking out about whatever the fuck you were freaking out and describe the sign. You can't. So you are telling your brain, so your brain, our brain becomes a two-year-old throwing a temper tantrum. So you are telling your brain, I know you want to fucking freak out and throw a temper tantrum, but we're going to describe the sign. Your fucking kid wants ice cream at 10 o'clock in the morning. The answer is no. But you don't negotiate with terrorists. And that's what your brain becomes, a two-year-old throwing a temper tantrum. So your brain is one part of you, but you are the CEO of your life. So it's like, okay, if you picture the conference room and here is the brain, beep, 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 beep. Okay, you need to keep it down because we are discussing the more important things, right?
Yes.
So it's that you are in charge, not your brain. And why people don't go deeper into the main issues is because it's scary, number one. And number two, it takes a lot of work. And there is still, we're in 2025, there is still a lot of stigma around therapy and mental health. And it's like, and especially for men, is like, and if they are in the military or they are police officers, it's like, I don't supposed to have feelings. Like, you know, I've had like, and it's like, no, you don't need to do it alone. Actually, going to therapy, I think that we all should go to therapy. I go to therapy. And when I tell my clients, my therapist said, oh, you go to therapy? Oh, fucking yes. Like, I'm fucking human too. Like, do you talk about me? The last thing I fucking talk about with my is about you. Like, I have my own shit to talk to my with my therapist, right? Like, don't fucking worry about it. But a lot of people believe that asking for help or going to therapy is a sign of weakness, and actually it's a sign of strength and emotional intelligence, because simply because you can take a punch, that doesn't mean that you live in the ring. So can you do it alone? Absolutely. But if you can have help, why the fuck do you want to reinvent the wheel? Like I always say, if you want to hang a picture, you can, you know, you can push the nail with your fingers and hurt yourself, or I'll show you the hammer and I'll show you the nails and I'll show you how to do it. And then you have the tools and boom, boom, and it's done. I'm not going to do it for you, but I'll show you the tools. And then if you want to hang the picture, you know how to do it. Because if I hang the picture for you, next time that you need to hang a picture, you need me. The first thing I want to do, like my goal when you walk into my office is to get you the fuck out of my office. That means I gave you the tools and you are good to go, right? It's like, I don't want to, no, Sasha, like, let me hold your hand. Get the fuck out, bitch. Like, you know, you have the hammer, you have the nails, and you have the picture. Go fucking hang it. Like, you don't need me. Right? So it's like, when people think that this is it's a sign of weakness, I'm like, no, it's a sign of emotional intelligence, because simply because you can do it alone, but with help, you can do it a lot faster, then why the fuck wouldn't you? Right? So,
yeah,
like, I'm all like, you know, even if you don't have depression or anxiety, like, we all need that neutral person who's going to give you, my job as a therapist is to present you with a different perspective. Because when you are in the picture, you cannot see the picture. Have you ever looked at a picture and you're like, what the fuck? Bitch, don't you have a mirror? But it's different when you look at the picture.
It is.
So my job is to present you with a different perspective. So even if, like, for everyday things, we need an outlet. When I was growing up, in Argentina, my mom, she was a stay-at-home mom. And I remember, like, her neighbors will come in the afternoon to have coffee and gossip every fucking day. We don't have that. We as women right now, we don't have that anymore. So it's like we need that venting space that it was so natural growing up. Now I'm talking 50 years ago, right? It was different. But it's like, we need that. So therapy will provide you with that neutral feedback that can help you look at the shit in a different manner so that you can make your own decisions. Like, people are like, what should I do? Like, bitch, I barely know what to do with my life, let alone tell you what to do with yours. But I will help you find the answers. We're going to find the answers together. But I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not your mom. Like, what should I do? What the fuck do I know? I'm the therapist, but you are the expert in your own life.
Yeah. And I love that you, just a little bit ago, you said that you're the CEO of your own life.
And right.
For me, I think that that is really powerful, because if you think of a CEO, that is the top of a company, right? Mm-hmm. They make the big decisions. They have the say. And so why don't you have the say in your own life?
Right. Absolutely.
You do. So accept it and exercise your ability to say no if you want to say no. Or yes, if you want to say yes, but then you also have to accept any consequences, negative or positive, doesn't matter, you know, that come along with that.
That's called accountability. And not taking action is taking action.
Absolutely.
When you don't make a decision, you're making a decision, right?
Yep. Inaction is still action.
So better that you make the decision rather than the universe imposing the decision on you.
Absolutely. So What is the difference between simply managing emotions and healing them? Like, how do you make the difference there?
It's kind of like putting a band-aid on the fracture instead of doing surgery and PT, right? So it's like, oh, okay, I stopped the bleeding, but that's not really what I need. I need the surgery, and then after the surgery, I need physical therapy to make my leg stronger, right? So that I can walk again. But a lot of times we just stop the bleed and I'll just keep going. And then eventually your fucking leg is going to fall off because you're not taking care of. So at that time, then you had to fucking take care of it. When maybe taking care of it, when it first showed up, it would have been a lot more manageable.
We often try to avoid pain, whatever pain is, doesn't have to be physical. But when it comes to emotional pain, a lot of people seem to avoid healing. It's hard. It's hard work. So is it because it's unknown or that it's still pain that they might avoid it?
Okay, so you don't want to work on it because you want to avoid pain. How the fuck is that working out for you when you're fucking miserable, right? So I think that we are masking the pain, really.
Yeah.
The pain doesn't go away. It's, again, like I close my eyes so you're not here. Like, no, I'm fucking feeling the pain. So feeling the pain is hard and working in therapy is hard. Choose your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you confront the pain with the idea of healing it, then you're doing it with a reason. We're not fucking like venting with a girlfriend about the abusive boyfriend. It's like, no, we are talking about this so I can correct the action in the future. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, like, so you avoid the pain in theory, but really you are causing more pain because your brain doesn't stop, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it doesn't work out in the long run. It's like, okay, I have a lump on my breast, but I ignore it. I ignored it for 5 years, but by the time I go to the doctor, now my cancer is stage 4, and maybe there is not much that can be done. But if I would have gone to the doctor 5 years ago, maybe it would be a stage 1 or 2, and there is something that can be done.
For someone who feels stuck in their anxiety or depression, what's one hopeful truth you want them to know?
That, again, like, you've been through stuff before, so if you can take a deep breath and bring yourself to the present moment with the grounding technique, right? Like describing something or touching something and describing what you're touching, and then focusing on your blessings. Well, we have the spotlight in our hands. So if we are looking for things that are going wrong, we are going to find a lot more of things that are going wrong. But if we take that light and we point it to our blessings, we're going to find a lot of blessings. So it's like, if you focus on the negative stuff, you're going to find more shit. If you focus on the things that you have, then it's like, oh, okay. Knowing that you've been through shit before and you overcame that, it's a nice reminder of, again, like, you know, you just have to be in the present moment. The anxiety is about being in the future and depression is about being in the past. In neither one of those, we can change, right? Because the future is not here and the past is already past. So it's like, what is it that I can do right now about this? So if we take action, so let's say that you have a meeting at work next week and you are so anxious about that.
if you start doing research or preparing for the meeting or whatever, like you are taking action right now. You are literally getting out of your head because you are doing something, right? And so the best thing for this is to do shit. If you are depressed, go for a walk. If you are anxious, do more research, right? Like, so it's like, so you are better prepared for the meeting on Wednesday instead of losing sleep right now. And then when the meeting comes on Wednesday, you're like, oh, so fucking rugged. Like the meeting is going to fail because you're not fully present. So it's like, okay. And if, you know, if you are depressed, find something to be grateful for. When we are grateful, we attract more blessings. But don't do it in a manipulative way where it's like, oh, well, if I say thank you, you're going to give me more. It's like, no, really. Like, I took, I'm grateful. I do a grateful journal every night. And I'm grateful for my house and for my car and for my job and for my arms and for my body because it moves. And I have my entire body, right, that I can use. And I don't want to lose sight of that because I do have a friend who is, he has cerebral palsy, so he's in a wheelchair now. And when we go out to lunch, and I'm like, I'm pushing the wheelchair. I'm like, I feel like the hot nurse. Like, I'm getting turned on because I'm pushing your wheelchair. It's like, you fucking sick in the head. I'm like, I know. But it helps me realize, like, there are a lot of things that I do that I'm not even aware that I'm doing. Like, that I take them for granted. Like, getting up and going to the bathroom. We don't think about those things, right? Like, so when I'm looking at, oh my God, like I'm so miserable. When we start finding these little miracles, then I realize I'm not as miserable as I thought. And another thing I want to say is don't believe your thoughts. Simply because they're there, that doesn't mean that they are fine. Right? Like, oh, I fuck up at work, so I'm a failure. Excuse me, you made a mistake. How does that make it the entire of you a failure? You made a mistake. You learn from it, and I guarantee you, you're not gonna make that mistake ever again because you fucking learn from that, right? So it's like avoid overgeneralizing. I'm never gonna get better. I'm never going to find love again. And whatever the thought might be, I'm going to get fired. How many times did you get fired? Because like you're thinking like, I'm going to get fired and you're still in the fucking job. Right? So and if it's a toxic environment, then maybe you shouldn't be there so you can take the initiative of looking for another job instead of waiting to get fired. Because when you take that initiative, you feel so empowered. You're doing it for you. Mm-hmm. Instead of allowing the universe to take care of this. Again, not making a decision is making a decision, right? So I'm my boss is an asshole. I don't feel appreciated. I don't feel valued. Okay. I'm not saying quit your job. I'm saying start looking for another. Right? I didn't feel appreciated in that corporate job. So I start thinking about my future, not the immediate future, but the long-term future. And I created a different reality for me, for myself. So it's like, oh, okay. It took a long time and a lot of work. But again, like working for someone else is hard. Working for yourself is hard. Pick your car.
I think that's a really difficult truth to swallow for many of us. Picking your hard, because almost everything is hard, right? As being an adult is hard. You have a choice whether to act like an adult or not act like an adult, but either way, it's going to be hard.
Right.
So, and also you mentioned you know, not saying you're always this and always that. I think limiting beliefs of and using the words that are so limiting, like always and never, really box us in sometimes. And the things that we tell ourselves, the stories and whatnot, really lock us in boxes sometimes.
Yes. And always, never big words, right? Like, you never listen to me. I'm listening to you right now. But you're fucking missing the point. But always, never, you know? Very you're limiting. Always late. Well, then maybe I tell you that let's do lunch at 12:30 and I showed up at 1. Because instead of showing up at 12:15 and then waiting 45 minutes because your ass is going to be late. And not taking it personal because it's not personal. I'm always on time. Always. If we're meeting at 8 and I'm there at 8, I'm late. I'm always 10 minutes early or 15 minutes early. I have friends who are chronically late. Do I want to share this time with you? I'll take you as you are. You know, I can choose to bring a book and fucking read a book or whatever while I'm waiting instead of getting pissed. So a lot of times when we get angry or upset about something, it's because we are personalized. But wait, she fucking, like, she came 30 minutes late to our lunch. Yeah. But a good way of finding out if you are personalizing is here is the situation. So you remove yourself from the situation and you put someone else. If the situation remains the same, then it's not personal. It's about the other person, not about you. So in the case of my friend, if it's you that she made the appointment with for lunch, she's going to be late for you. It's not about Zulma. It's about her. Now, there are a lot of things that I love about her, so that's why I put up with that shit. But once I don't take it personal anymore, because it's not that she was like, oh, I'm going to make Zulma wait. For the life of her, she cannot be on time. So how is that about Zulma? Right? We are driving down the street and I cut you off and I ruin your day. You fucking bitch, are you blind? Did you get your driver license in a cereal box? I'm already gone. I'm living in your head, rent free.
Absolutely.
So you are taking it personal. I don't even know who the fuck you are. You don't know who I am. So we can think, so what can we do in that case? So we need to pay attention to what we're thinking. If I'm thinking you are a fucking bitch who is blind and you did it on purpose, you're going to ruin my day. So instead, I'm choosing the thought that, oh, her mom had a heart attack. She's rushing to the hospital. Because if I choose that thought, it creates compassion. Well, how do you know which one is true? It doesn't matter which one is true because I'm never going to find out. So out of this one that I don't know if that is true, but it's ruining my day, and this one that is, I don't know if it's true, but it's eliciting compassion, let me get this one. Right? So I have that power. The situation is the same, but what I'm thinking about the situation is completely different. So if I think you're a fucking bitch who is blind and you did it to me when you don't even fucking know me, like we are not that special. Or if I'm thinking, oh, she's rushing to the hospital because she had an emergency. Which one is going to make your day better? Then fucking pick that one. Like, you know, stop personalizing because 95%, I will say, of shit is not personal, but we are taking it personal.
Absolutely. I agree. I want to go back to when you went back to school at 42 and 50. That really takes so much grit and determination. How much of that would you say was motivation? How much was something else? And then...
Okay, and then?
And then what does consistency or discipline, like what role does consistency or discipline play compared to motivation?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I have a pet peeve about motivation. Motivation is so overrated. You have done shit you were not motivated to do your entire life. When you pop a kid, you don't tell the kid, oh, I'm hurting, I'm not going to breastfeed you because my boob hurt. You fucking get up and you feed the kid or you change the diaper. When you want to kill your fucking coworker because she gets on your nerves and you shut up for work, you're not motivated to go to work, are you? But you do it. So motivation is like, to me, it's a word that should be eliminated from the vocabulary. What it takes is self-discipline, not motivation. Because when I was taking five classes, graduate level classes a semester, I wasn't motivated. I had one class at fucking 7 in the morning and another class at 7 p.m. So I wasn't motivated, but my discipline was what kept me going. So when people told me like, oh, I'm not motivated, you don't need motivation. You need discipline. Self-discipline is what is going to create the consistency, and that is what is going to make you successful. You have done shit you were not motivated to do your entire life. So don't fucking tell me about motivation. Now, so I have clients who came to me and I'm too old to go to school. Oh, motherfucker, like, I started my bachelor's at 42 and my master's at 50, and English is not my first language. You are barking at the wrong tree. Now tell me you don't have the passion. But don't tell me that you're not. That is a motivation issue. Like, no. You probably were not motivated to fucking come to therapy and you did. So it's like, motivation. I have a whole fucking episode on my podcast about motivation. Because it's like, no, let's step out of that trap. It is a trap. Like, no, you don't need motivation. You need discipline. If you have discipline for anything, school, work, going to the gym, taking care of your body, taking care of your health, discipline. There were times I wasn't motivated to go to the doctor, but I went. So, I wasn't that motivated to get a shot every 4 weeks, but I did, right? So, and if you look back at your own life, again, like, why do I keep inviting people to look at their own lives? Because that is your proof that you did it, so you can do it again. We forget. We have a tendency to forget. But we have done a lot of shit in our lives that we were not motivated to do.
I hadn't thought about it that way. And that is so, so true. And also going back to what you said previously, we take for granted things that, we've done. Like, we can prove it to ourselves that we can make it through things because every day we've made it through something, whether it was, we were sick that day, or, we had a car accident, or even, we just didn't want to do something, but we did it anyway. We're capable fully in most cases, and we just need to change that perspective, right? And look at, what have I done? What can I do?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Would you say that determination is different from motivation?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Because determination is so tied to discipline. Like, I was determined to fulfill my goal. Not even cancer could stop me. But motivation, I wasn't motivated when I had cancer, probably, right? But I was determined to get better, and I was determined to go back to school, and I was determined to be a therapist. So determination and discipline are so intertwined. It's kind of like mashed potatoes, right? Like, what is the potato and where is the butter? Like, no, it's like they are so hand in hand. So it's like, yeah, determination is as important as discipline.
That's a wrap on part two of my conversation with Zulma Williams, the swearing therapist. I'm always so incredibly grateful for Zulma. As always, she kept it real, giving us tools we can use in the moment and reminding us that action beats rumination and that we've all survived 100% of our hardest days so far. If today's episode helped, go follow The Swearing Therapist on Instagram for straight talk tips on anxiety, depression, and healing, plus a healthy dose of humor and honesty. And make sure you're subscribed to The High Functioning Disaster, because the next episode is a powerhouse. In episode 3, Zulma shares how a setback at work pushed her to found Dragonfly Therapy Services, why boundaries and an abundance mindset shaped the business she actually wants, and how to reframe "I'm a failure" by putting your thoughts on the witness stand, evidence for, evidence against, and what a friend would say. We also open a tender, courageous conversation about grief. Love that has nowhere to go, with practical ways to honor it through rituals, memory, and self-kindness. As a note, my conversation with Zulma includes discussion on grief, suicidal ideation, and loss. Thanks for listening to The High Functioning Disaster. Life might be messy, but we don't have to clean it up alone. See you next time. Oh, and one last thing. The content shared on The High Functioning Disaster is for informational and conversational purposes only and is not intended as professional, medical, or mental health advice. Everyone's situation is unique, and what we talk about here may not apply to your specific circumstances. Please do what's right for you and always consult with a qualified professional for medical, mental health, financial, or legal guidance. You take care of you, boo. See you next time.